بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the most merciful, the most compassionate.
وَالصَّافَّاتِ صَفًّا.
By those who ranged themselves in rows.
فَالزَّاجِرَاتِ زَجْرًا.
By those who reprove severely.
فَالتَّالِيَاتِ ذِكْرًا.
And those who recite the exhortation. And those who recite the exhortation. The majority of Quran commentators are agreed that all the three groups mentioned here belong to the angels. This is the interpretation of the verses made by Abdullah ibn Masud, Abdullah ibn Abbas, Qatada, Masruq, Sayyid ibn Jubair, Ikrama, Mujahid, Al-Sudi, ibn Zaid, and Rabi ibn Anas. Some commentators, however, do interpret the verses differently. However, the context in which the verses occur lends support to the view that those referred to here are angels. The significance of the statement that they ranged themselves in rows is that the angels who manage the whole order of the universe are no more than God's servants and bondsmen. As such, they are always in a state of readiness to obey God and carry out His commands. This truth is reiterated in verse 165 below, where the angels introduce themselves as follows: "We range ourselves in rows as humble servants." As for the words, "those who reprove severely," verse 2, according to some commentators, they mean that some angels direct the clouds and bring about rainfall. Even though this meaning of the verse is not incorrect, what seems more plausible in view of the contents of the verses that follow is the meaning that there is a group of angels who severely reprove the disobedient and afflict the guilty. This reproof, however, is not simply verbal, but may also afflict the disobedient and the guilty in the form of natural disasters and historic calamities. The statement that they recite the exhortation, verse 3, means that among these angels are also those that constantly remind people of the truth so that they take heed. This exhortation may also take the form of the devastations that occurred in the past, teaching human beings a lesson. It may also be in the form of the teachings that these angels convey to the prophets, and also in the form of the inspirations that reach virtuous people through them.
إِنَّ إِلَٰهَكُمْ لَوَاحِدٌ.
Surely, your God is one. Surely, your God is one. The proclamation of this truth is accompanied by taking an oath in the name of the angels. In other words, it is affirmed that the workings of the whole universe reflect its servitude to God. Also, natural phenomena expose before man the evil consequences of deviating from God's servitude. Moreover, it has been a part of the universe's scheme of things that people are reminded of one and the same truth in varying ways. All these bear out that man's Lord is none but the one true God. The word ilah that occurs here has two connotations. In one sense, it means the deity that is an object of actual service and worship. In the other, it means the deity that truly deserves to be worshipped. The word ilah is employed in this verse in its latter sense, for evidently it could not have been used to denote the false gods that human beings invented and which they worshipped.
رَبُّ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَمَا بَيْنَهُمَا وَرَبُّ الْمَشَارِقِ.
The Lord of the heavens and the earth, and of whatever lies between the two, the Lord of the easts, the Lord. The truth brought home by these verses is that only the Lord and Sovereign of the universe is mankind's true God. It would be absolutely irrational that in the presence of the true Rabb, that is, Lord, Sovereign, Guardian, and Sustainer, anyone else should be deemed deserving of worship. What underlies man's worship of God is his recognition of the being who is the source of all benefits and losses and of the fulfillment of all of his needs and requirements. It is a recognition of He who can mar his fate, and in fact upon whom his very existence and survival depend. It is therefore an innate requirement of human nature to recognize God's supremacy and to surrender to Him. Once man realizes this truth, he can readily grasp that it is pointless and absurd to worship false gods, for they have absolutely no power. Worship is exclusively the right of the one who has absolute power. powerless entities, by contrast, are not entitled to any worship. Man can gain nothing by turning to them. False gods are incapable of doing anything. Turning to them and praying to them rather than to the all-powerful God is as foolish an act as approaching subjects of the sovereign who themselves invoke God's mercy. And of whatever lies between the two, the Lord of the Easts. The sun does not always rise at the same point. Furthermore, it appears in different parts of the earth at varying times. This explains the Quranic use of the word Masharik, Easts, in its plural form. It is significant that the Quran does not use the corresponding word Maghrib, Wests, here. The word Maghrib, singular of Maghrib, signifies the direction in which the sun sets. The reason is that the word Easts also implies the word Wests. However, in Surah Al-Miraj 70:40, God is described as the Lord of the Easts and the Wests.
إِنَّا زَيَّنَّا السَّمَاءَ الدُّنْيَا بِزِينَةٍ الْكَوَاكِبِ
We have adorned the lower heaven with the adornment of the stars. We have adorned the lower heaven. By the lower heaven is meant the heaven nearer to us, one which we see with our naked eyes, without the aid of any external equipment such as a telescope. The worlds that can be observed with the help of telescopes, and the worlds that we have not yet been able to observe even with the help of the equipments of observation available to us, are the farther heavens. In this regard, it ought to be clarified that Sama is not a fixed, static object. This word and its equivalents have been used from earliest times to denote the heavens, or simply the sphere above us.
وَحِفْظًا مِّن كُلِّ شَيْطَانٍ مَارِدٍ
And have protected it from every rebellious Satan. And have protected it from every rebellious Satan. The upper sphere is not an empty space that may be trespassed by anyone. On the contrary, it is strictly guarded and barriers have been erected in its various regions so that it is impossible for any rebellious devils to trespass it. Every planet has its own orbit and sphere, and it is impossible for another to enter it, or for the planet itself to move out of it. While looking around, one feels that there is nothing else but space. In truth, however, this space contains numerous checkposts, each of which forms a formidable barrier. One can have some idea of this by acquainting oneself with the myriad difficulties being experienced by man in his effort to reach the moon, the Earth's closest neighbor. In like manner, the jinn face insurmountable difficulties in ascending to the heavens.
لا يسمعون إلى الملأ الأعلى ويقذفون من كل جانب.
These Satans cannot listen to what transpires in the High Council, for they are pelted away from every side.
دحورا ولهم عذاب واصب.
And are repelled. Theirs is an unceasing chastisement.
إلا من خطف الخطفة فأتبعه شهاب ثاقب.
And if any is able to snatch a fragment, he is pursued by a piercing flame. And if any is able to snatch a fragment, he is pursued by a piercing flame. To better appreciate this, one should recall that soothsaying was quite rampant in Arabia at that time. Such soothsayers claimed to have control over the jinn and devils, which brought to them all kinds of information. It was against this backdrop that when Muhammad, peace be upon him, was designated a prophet, he was dubbed a soothsayer, for he began to recite the verses of the Quran, which contained information about man's past and his future. The prophet, peace be upon him, also informed people that he received this revelation from an angel. Upon hearing this, the unbelievers immediately began to accuse him of being a practitioner of this craft and said that like other soothsayers, he too had links with the devils who informed him of tidings from on high. The present verse refutes this charge, asserting that devils have no access to the heavens. Moreover, the devils are incapable of deriving any information from the angels. If, however, anything the angels say accidentally reaches their ears, then even before they descend to earth, they are hotly pursued by meteors. In other words, devils cannot interfere in the workings of the universe. They do not even have any access to the basic information regarding it.
فَاسْتَفْتِهِمْ أَهُمْ أَشَدُّ خَلْقًا أَمْ مَنْ خَلَقْنَا إِنَّا خَلَقْنَاهُمْ مِنْ طِينٍ لَازِبٍ.
So ask them, that is, human beings, were they harder to create than the objects we created? We created them from sticky clay. So ask them, that is, human beings, were they harder to create than the objects we created? This is in response to the Meccan unbelievers' doubts about the hereafter. Indeed, they ruled out the hereafter as something impossible. It was inconceivable for them that the dead would be brought back to life. The Quran advances a series of arguments in order to corroborate the doctrine of the hereafter. First, it raises the question, if the unbelievers think that God does not have the power to resurrect mankind, then what is their position regarding the fact that God created the heavens and the earth? This, not to mention the innumerable other objects that exist in the heavens and the earth. There is therefore no reason for them to think that God lacks the power to bring the dead back to life. We created them from sticky clay. There is nothing all that unusual about man. After all, what he was made from was sticky clay, and he can be created from the same material again. The present verse means that the first man was created from sticky clay, and thereafter, the human race multiplied from the semen of that first man. It also means that every human being is made from sticky clay, insofar as the whole substance of man's existence is derived from earth. The semen of which man is created is a product of food. From the time of man's conception till the moment of his death, man's whole body is made of constituents drawn from food. Whether food is derived from animal or vegetable origins, its ultimate source is clay. When clay is combined with water, it becomes possible to grow grain and vegetables and fruit, and also to nourish animals which supply milk and meat for man's consumption. The basis of this argument is as follows. Had the clay not been invested with the ability to receive the essence of life, how could people be alive today? On the other hand, if clay already has the ability to receive the essence of life, something that is clearly proved by the existence of human beings, then why is it not plausible that through the same clay it will be possible to recreate them at some future date?
بَلْ عَجِبْتَ وَيَسْخَرُونَ.
You marvel at the wondrous creations of Allah, and they scoff at it.
وَإِذَا ذُكِّرُوا لَا يَذْكُرُونَ.
And when they are admonished, they pay no heed.
وَإِذَا رَأَوْا آيَةً يَسْتَسْخِرُونَ.
And if they see any sign, they laugh it away.
وَقَالُوا إِنْ هَذَا إِلَّا سِحْرٌ مُبِينٌ.
And say, this is nothing but plain sorcery. And say, this is nothing but plain sorcery. The unbelievers reject every notion about the hereafter as belonging to the realm of magic and sorcery. For them, the next life, the Prophet, peace be upon him, talks about, one which involves the revival of the dead, the holding of God's court of reckoning, the award of paradise and hell, was just fantasy. Alternatively, this can be taken to mean that they regarded the Prophet, peace be upon him, as enchanted, as someone who, under the spell of enchantment, talked of such bizarre things.
أَإِذَا مِتْنَا وَكُنَّا تُرَابًا وَعِظَامًا أَإِنَّا لَمَبْعُوثُونَ.
Is it ever possible that after we die and are reduced to dust and a skeleton of bones, we will be raised to life?
أَوَآبَاؤُنَا الْأَوَّلُونَ.
And so, also, shall our forefathers of yore be raised to life?
قُلْ نَعَمْ وَأَنْتُمْ دَاخِرُونَ.
Tell them, yes, and you are utterly helpless against Allah. Tell them, yes, and you are utterly helpless against Allah. The unbelievers are told that God has the absolute power to make them as He wants. When God so willed, He brought human beings into existence by simply hinting at what He wills. Likewise, whenever God so wills, all human beings will instantly perish. By the same token, they will be resurrected whenever He so wills.
فَإِنَّمَا هِيَ زَجْرَةٌ وَاحِدَةٌ فَإِذَا هُمْ يَنظُرُونَ
There will be a single stern rebuff, and lo, they will be observing with their own eyes all that they had been warned against. There will be a single stern rebuff, and lo, they will be observing with their own eyes all that they had been warned against. When the time for it comes, recreating the world will not be a difficult task for God to accomplish. A mere rebuff from God will suffice to awaken the dead. The Quranic expression employed in this context seems to suggest that all human beings, from the very beginning of time up till the last day, have been in a state of sleep. Then there will be a sudden reproachful command, "Wake up!" All will then be instantly up and awake.
وَقَالُوا يَا وَيْلَنَا هَذَا يَوْمُ الدِّينِ
They will then say, "Woe for us, this is the day of judgment."
هَذَا يَوْمُ الْفَصْلِ الَّذِي كُنْتُمْ بِهِ تُكَذِّبُونَ
Yes, this is the day of final decision that you used to deny as a lie. Yes, this is the day of final decision that you used to deny as a lie. This might be the remark made by the believers to the unbelievers or by the angels. It is also possible that the prevailing state of affairs in the hereafter will convey this message to them. Alternatively, this might be the reaction of concerned people as a part of their soliloquy. In other words, addressing themselves, they will say, "You thought all along that there would be no day of judgment. Now that day is come, and woe has betaken you."